welcome. Unfortunately, I didn't want to reschedule or change this because it would have caused some conflicts. Jay was unable to make it. He had something come up, and well, things happen, and we have sometimes to make those things a priority. So he is unable to join, and by sheer coincidence, the other backup plan was unable to join because they're live on another show. So welcome. And the topic isn't going to change because he may join me in just a moment. I just found out. All right, cool. He's got my link if he wants to join. But back to the topic at hand here. First, a little bit of housekeeping. We still are working on the sponsor thing, so you are in luck. You don't have to listen to me read some ad, but we're closer. I'm working out some deals on that, but thank you for those who reached out, and there's still opportunity because we haven't settled on exactly what we're going to doing. All right, there's the housekeeping part of this. Now I want to start with, before we get into the main topic of technical debt, and it's going to be a few updates that came out. And I believe these are important to the home lab. It's kind of a news section we want to add, and it's essentially to let you know that there's some cool things that come in. The cool things are new version of TrueNAS, the release candidate. I just did a video on the beta of it. The beta is shockingly stable. I have a few systems I loaded with it. I know TrueNAS is well loved in the home lab. This is all TrueNAS scale beta. Some of you may have heard, and I need to do an updated because I did a video about there is a future for the free BSD version, although it's kind of being sunset. They've made it a little bit more official that they're essentially sunsetting it. There's just not enough demand for the free BSD version. And also, directly related is this new beta of Scale that has come out, has those features in it that people like myself have been kind of, you know, not happy with that they didn't exist in Scale, which really comes down to the handling of the art cache. They realized pretty quickly that this was a problem, but not the problem they thought. And what I mean is, if you go through and read in the forums, Chris Moore, head of the head of essentially the programming and everything that goes on for TrueNAS Scale, said, hey, you know, we thought this would be harder to do because there was allegedly a lot of rumors that you couldn't use the same BSD code to make this work in Scale, but it turns out it works. And that's the good news. So whatever was making that incompatible is not really the issue. So good news for all of you that are on the fence of whether or not you should switch your core machines over to Scale because of, you know, that issue that I mentioned right there. I also am going to do possibly a separate video on TrueNAS Scale, but without needing the applications. I bring that up because some people go, well, I don't need the apps. This is certainly a customer use case for us. And I want to see if there's a way or if there's even a need for me just to disable any of those apps on the back end. And I actually think if you don't choose an application directory and you don't even set it up, it doesn't run any of those services, therefore freeing up some more resources to not be used on things you're not going to use. Although I do really like having NetData in there. So it's kind of a trade-off of you would lose access to that. And I do think that's a good app to have on there. But that's the TrueNAS update. The next update is the folks over at Unify. Their latest release brings some extra enhanced functionality. This is something interesting about Unify is there's so many more features that the hardware can do, but the software lags behind and just hasn't gotten around to. So this latest 8.1 release actually turns on features that people have commented many times. This has been, you know, of course, the absolute audience I'm talking to here, the home lab audience. We poke and tinker at things. We take them apart. We start coding them. We start modifying them to our own needs. And one of the things that people have frequently pointed out is, hey, I can actually make the hardware do more than the software can do. And I'm like, yeah, that's absolutely true. The problem is the moment you start using the interface again, you break all the changes that you make and they don't necessarily survive updates. Well, they're finally coming up with things like ACL, OSPF, and several other features that are going to be in there. So they're getting those more advanced features that people, I don't think, look at Unify 4, but it's kind of cool that they're getting there with it. And I think that's a really good thing. You know, I like to see more competition in these ecosystems, and Unify compared to some of the other large companies makes a relatively affordable device that has a nice UI on it. I say nice UI. There's always someone going, why do I even need a UI? Shouldn't we just do this all from the command line? Yes, I know there's the command line people. Those people I'm definitely in line with, so to speak. I just know what I think about things from the bigger ecosystem and realizing not everyone has the time to learn a command line because they don't want to do this as a network engineering project. They want to get things configured so they can pursue the next project they want to pursue, or just the hobbyists. It kind of figures out, you know, lands on where you want to be as a hobbyist in this. But, you know, it's one of those things that we kind of like to talk about here, some of those updated softwares out there. Also, Christian Lempa did a video on NetBird, so maybe you have seen that. It's been on my to-do list for a little while, looking around me. I know there's a couple NetBird stickers that are actually sitting on my desk. One of them is now on one of my cabinets behind me out of view, but I have a few NetBird shirts because I've been interacting with them. I've been testing it in the back end. I just haven't gotten around to a tutorial, but for those of you asking for a tutorial, yes, there is a tutorial available over from Christian Lempa. And it was a sponsored one, which of course brings up the people discussing whether or not there should be sponsored posts. But as I mentioned in the first few minutes of this, you got to have some sponsors in. Sponsors are kind of needed because that's what keeps the lights on. It's not the YouTube ad revenue. That is for sure. They do not treat us kindly, if you will. It is kind of the ebb and flow, especially when you're creating deep dive technical content. It's not going to get the views that general advertisers want. So we got to have to look towards sponsors to make that work. I also seen a tweet, and I have not validated this, but the people from True Charts have talked about that they've fixed the compatibility in there. And I just seen it because I know it's not related, but someone has a similar name in there in the comments that kind of triggered that in my mind. Because when they first released the beta of the latest version for TrueNAS Scale, I know there was some incompatibility that I noticed in the forums. And I guess that has been addressed. This is always the cat and mouse game. When there's a new version, third-party support in the TrueNAS Scale ecosystem seems to take a little bit longer if those changes that they have between versions are breaking changes for the dependencies that they have. So good news is for those of you that are, you know, hoping to use TrueCharts or continue using it now, you don't have to wait on the beta. I did see them tweet that they have now addressed some of those issues. So I think those are all the updates I have to get out of the way there. But I feel they're important. Let me know in the comments down below if there's something you like. And as always, and I'm going to throw this up on the screen for those watching the live show, but feedback@thehomelab.show, that is how you can find us or get to us, because we do like hearing from you. And the weirdest thing is me and Jay delayed for a little while posting that we were going to put this feedback on there because we're like, oh, we'll get flooded with emails. Turns out we get almost no emails from people. So having it out there, apparently people don't like sending emails. I wonder if it's the double-edged sword of people don't like sending emails because they're afraid we're going to spam them or put them on a list somewhere, which, by the way, me and Jay do not do that because we are also people who do not like being put on the list of things. So, all right. I see someone else commented, tinkering around is not the goal for production and business. Well, it's not the goal for production and business. This is true. This is why we have home labs, or I should say, or I've loved this quote where everybody has a lab. Some people also are lucky enough to have a test environment too. But yeah, spam is definitely bad. But don't worry, we're not using feedback@thehomelabshow to collect anyone's email address. We don't really have any special filters on it. So other than it goes into a specific inbox. I've seen very little spam coming towards us, which actually is the shocking part to me. But maybe people don't email us because they're worried about the other way happening. But we do like hearing from you. We do like answering all your questions. Now on to the topic of technical debt, because this is where the challenges come in. I'm going to start with where I started really thinking about this a lot, because there's a good post in my forum, and it's someone asking about, are VPNs really secure? Because they keep seeing in the news breaches caused by VPNs. And what do VPNs have to do with technical debt? Quite a bit, because most of the VPNs that you see in the news causing the breaches, and the latest has been Avanti, and the Avanti Pulse Secure is kind of a disaster. And I have a LinkedIn post that I did where I just kind of ranted about this. And me ranting was not just to rant. It was actually because these are some of the problems, is the technical debt that these companies carry. Now, they do things to make the product look more appealing, like giving it a facelift. So we've got this cool interface on it, and we're told this is the new Avanti Pulse Secure VPN, but the reality of it was it's actually the same old VPN system that was sold to a private equity company like 12 years ago. And this was essentially the nuts and bolts of where this comes from. Is here is the kernel running in that. And this is from some security researchers, all the sites. I'll leave that LinkedIn post. I'll add it to the description for people interested in it. But the current version that Avanti uses of kernel, this is the Linux kernel, is from December 2009, 2.62.32. And December 2009, the version of kernel they're using is from 2009 as well. OpenSSL, 6 years ago. Perl version 5.6.1. That's 23 years old. And let's see, we have PSQL 9.614. So that's 5 years old. Cab Extract, 22 years old. SSH version 5.3. That's 14 years ago. And Unzip version 6, 15 years ago. So the reason this came up as a discussion is people were really worried that maybe even exposing VPNs like OpenVPN or WireGuard would also carry some of these problems. Well, that's where you're in luck. Open source products would be torched, if you will, in the comments. If someone from one of these large open source companies or one of these open source projects were to package it, so to speak, on 15-year-old, 20, I think the oldest one in there was 22-year-old technologies, you would go, well, I'm not going to use such a project. Now, you look at OpenVPN specifically, it's actually gone through in more recent years, not one, but two full code audits. And being that the code is all public, it's very on public display. They found nuances in there for ways people could have security problems. But a lot of due diligence was done with these open source projects. And that is why I don't worry about exposing OpenVPN. WireGuard is much newer, has also gone through a lot of scrutiny. And same thing, because it's not built on these really old systems. Now, this brings us over to something like Fortinet and some of their security problems. Because WireGuard, I don't know if WireGuard is even supported in Fortinet, but people started asking about, what about Fortinet? What about the problems there? And the challenge comes back to, they're built on a giant pile of technical debt. They're closed source, so we don't exactly know what's in it. It was only through some reverse engineering we learned what was in the Avanti system, but Fortinet suffers from the same thing. These companies get so big, they don't want to face that technical debt, so they want to keep selling the product. And this is where the ecosystem is so much different than maybe what you're running in your home lab, because I'm not saying there's no one running Fortinet products in their home lab. There's definitely some people, but when you compare it to some of the modern systems, such as the OpenVPN system built into major appliances and even systems like Netgate, OpenSense, Untangle is probably falling by the wayside a little bit. Won't get too off topic on that. But the technical debt problem really isn't there with these open source projects where there's a lot of visibility and they take the time to refactor the code. It's really scary to people to see all the problems, but not realizing they're not facing them the same way that the corporate environments are, because these corporate environments with their closed source products try to make you believe that they're, you know, modern, but they're not, because a business decision was made in most of those cases. Do we spend a lot of time? Do we head on this technical debt, or do we keep selling the product because it makes money? And because as long as it presents to the customer as a working product, we can keep selling this working product. Matter of fact, when you look at the Avanti problem, a private equity firm decided that selling the product for years and years without actually refactoring the code was probably, even if you replayed it with all the bad publicity they have today, a winning bet for long-term money making. So they're optimized not for security, but they were optimized how much money can they make for this. Back to why this matters to the home lab. Let's bring it home for that now. You have an opportunity in your home lab. And this is something I was thinking about as I just rebuilt something. You're not operating at the same scale usually. So you have this opportunity to solve some of those technical debts or test that technical debt and figure out what is a better way to do this. You can really start thinking about it that way, which is huge, to really land on it and go, all right, do I keep carrying along with this old software because it works. And I don't want to disrupt people who are also sharing this household with me that rely on my home lab to watch their movies or use their internet. But that's a minor amount of disruption when you think about it. And this is where you have an opportunity to not be that next generation who moves into. So I know a lot of younger people in the home lab or just people in general who are wanting to move into a tech career. Home lab is that starting point where you get your wits about you, if you will, how you kind of figure things out, how you start breaking things and then go, aha, this is how I want to structure things. And you have an opportunity now to really think through that. I've always been someone who doesn't like technical debt. I have frequently, even though it's in production, so to speak, in my business environment, I've always gone head on and say, what can I try that's different? There's a lot of risk that comes with that, but I got that confidence that I'm willing to just yank the plug, delete the thing, copy the data somewhere else, build a new system and put it in production use because I have done this so many times in my home lab. Before I even make a video, I have torn down and reloaded TrueNAS so many times or done some process in TrueNAS, such as my recent videos about setting up NFS shares, so repeatedly that I'm not even having to read any context menus. It's almost like an autopilot thing. You get good at it. So this allows you to build that muscle memory as you do it and then not have to think about it because the worst thing you can do is build your lab once and not understand or not take good notes on how you build it. Me and Jay, we've talked quite a bit about this, where you should always understand how you built it and be able to repeat that process. Your data should be sacred. We'll definitely agree with that. But the structures that it's built on should be repeatable, should be easily rebuilt. And if you go all the way into the advanced world of automation, especially when you get something like either Ansible, Kubernetes, et cetera, some of those fun scripting, auto deploy infrastructure, Terraform, now you're building it as code, which makes it that much easier to rebuild things and that much easier to rip out that technical debt. This is huge. These are one of the reasons I love some of the automation, but don't overcomplicate things. The complexity is often what leads you into technical debt because you're standing up something if you're not really familiar with it. And I'll, for example, throw myself here. I have not taken the time to get good or learn Kubernetes. It's just not something I use during the day. And I see a lot of people want to use it in their home labs, but unfortunately, and this is where the consultant hat gets put on, I see people who create these sometimes overly complicated things. And when they fall over, they're in full on emergency mode and they start reaching out to people going, I don't really know how all this works. So you should always build on that. This is what will keep you out of that technical debt and allow you to update. Because one of the worst things I see, and this goes in place, especially with things that are popular in the home lab, which is going to be anything that you publicly expose, such as your firewall or the VPN on it, or more specifically, there's a ton of discussion on my YouTube comments all the time. And same with Jay, we get a lot of people ask us about Nextcloud. And unfortunately, there has been some flaws in Nextcloud. The other unfortunate part is Nextcloud is not always completely simple to set up. It's gotten substantially better in more recent years, but people who set it up 3 or 4 years ago probably haven't updated it because of the problems they had doing it. You really need to think about that and face it head on and say, if I'm going to have this publicly exposed, I need to really go forward and get this, you know, get ahead of this technical debt of not understanding how it works. Tear it down, build it up as many times as it takes for you to have muscle memory so that doesn't become one of your factors of why something hasn't been updated and why you're carrying this technical debt. Home lab is absolutely the place you should be doing this. I was even kind of thinking about this, and one of the things that I realized is one of my own technical debt that I plan to really deal with. It's just a backup server, but it's been hanging out for about 6 years. And just about, I think it's got like 5 or 5.5 years of runtime. Maybe it's 5.5 years. I looked at it last night. Either way, I've had it. I swapped drives in it a couple times, but the drives that have been there have 5+ years of runtime. I'm going to say I got my use out of them. And I'm like, oh, it's my one TrueNAS core. It's my one old system. And I now have to face, how do I move? I got to move all the data. It only has 1 gig cards in it. So all the data on there, which is about 7 or 8 terabytes of data, is not going to come off that thing very fast. So there's got to be a little planning put in place. I might just pull the drives out and put them in something else and import the drives somewhere else, because that's actually going to be faster than you know, you put all the data in at a 1 gig connection, but over 5 years, a lot of data has accumulated on over 5 years on there. And it's just one of those things you want to, I want to address it, because looking at old hardware, I seen someone had mentioned this as well. When you start looking at the old hardware, you're like, yep, there's a failure point. There is the, I'm super happy I got 5 years of use with no errors on a system. Now I'm going, okay, those are 5 years on those spinning drives of collecting data. There is a substantially higher likelihood. It's on the other side of the bell curve for happiness. And I'm going to end up unhappy. So I'm willing to readdress that. I also did this recently as I rebuilt my Bitwarden. I realized Bitwarden was built on an older version of Debian, and I could have just done the upgrade, but it also had some problems with the older version. And if you are self-hosting Bitwarden, you've probably run into this problem, and you'll go, wait a minute, I suddenly have a bunch of errors I can't update because it's looking for a feature of Docker that doesn't exist in the slightly older versions of Debian. And you're like, yep, it does not. So I just tear it down and rebuild it again. This is one of the reasons that I'm always moving. If you ask me like what my base OS is for something I'm using, it's usually going to be Debian 12. Previously, it was some Ubuntu versions, as those have gotten away. But because I've documented, matter of fact, I have videos on how to set up Bitwarden. I thought about making a video how to migrate Bitwarden, but it's actually as simple as setting it up. You just reset it up on a new system and you copy the BW data place over. You just take that data directory, copy it over to the new system. Have a great day. All the settings, all the configurations in there. So yeah, no problem. You don't have to worry about like what it took me. How long was I down for? I don't know, probably about 5 minutes. So I was suffered 5 minutes of downtime because I think it took 5 minutes or less to copy the data over and then for Docker pull to grab the latest version again and import everything. So it's really not that bad. But the reason it's not bad, I tested this over and over again. I've done videos on how to install Bitwarden. And this is one of the great things about virtual machines. Leave your existing ones intact and running. Don't take them down and just start building things in parallel. I've talked a lot about building like, you know, XO from sources. I swap the base OS for that all the time because it's become so arbitrarily easy. My config files, greatly important to me. I don't feel like putting all those settings back in. So there's one little config file. That's all I need. And then send it over. Well, actually two. I need the config file for how I built it and some of the parameters in there, which are not that many, and then the actual config that's got my user and remotes and some of the other things in there. So two little config files, which the second one you can just restore after you rebuilt XO from sources, but it makes your life so much easier to do this. Now, the next technical debt that I am facing that is a little bit harder, but Jay has solved this way better than me. I wish he could have been here to talk about it because he's done it with an Ansible pull script, is rebuilding my computer itself. This is your own technical debt because there's a reason I want to reload my computer. There's a bug I found in Flatpak that goofed up file handling. I don't know how to fix it. I don't feel like spending time fixing it. It's kind of a waste of time because I know reloading my system would fix that. And reloading my system is actually arbitrarily easy with one exception. I have not taken the time to properly figure out how to back up all of my DaVinci editing software, which I think I have figured out. So that is the next one that I have to face. So I will absolutely admit my own guilt here of creating some of my own technical debt, but I'm willing to face it. I set time aside, as I really encourage all of you to do so in your home lab, and figure these things out. Figure out what happens when you reload it, what happens when you rebuild it. Make sure you're at the ready, because sometimes these systems will just fail on you and you won't be ready for them to fail. You won't know how to solve that technical debt. You'll be in full duress mode, which is, of course, substantially harder to do. So those are kind of my thoughts on it. I see some comments in here. I'll read a little bit of a few of them in here. I use OpenVPN on my home firewall and the same at work. No need for all these VPN vendors. Yeah, this is kind of a point of contention I have a lot. There's times when, because of the basic business politics, if you will, where they're like, oh, I have to use this VPN because it has some feature that makes an auditor happy, even though this VPN is a lesser product in terms of security. Now, there's also the trade-off many of these have of security and convenience when you talk about products. Specifically, what I mean by that is OpenVPN definitely going to be on a little bit more of the complex side compared to a VPN where I can just go to a website. I can just, you know, http://vpn.mycompanyname.com. I can put my username and password in there. It'll magically connect me and I'm into all my resources. Those come at the cost of convenience and security being opposed to each other. What happens is that great level of convenience we wanted there now causes the problem of, hey, they've got an entire database behind this VPN. I wonder if there's a SQL injection vulnerability. Matter of fact, just for some reference here, for anyone who sees, and this is recently with the Fortinet again, is when you see a SQL injection vulnerability, this vulnerability is not something we don't know how to solve. Matter of fact, we solved SQL injection problems forever ago, it feels like. This has been on the OWASP list. This is well known and well documented how to not have a SQL vulnerability. So when a company has it and they fix it, and by fix it, I should say mitigate it. The best way we can describe this in cybersecurity is where there's smoke, there's fire, which means if there's one SQL injection and they patch it, there's probably a dozen more that we're going to have that are adjacent to it. It's one of those things like you find a little crack in a product and you know if they've got things exposed in a way that made the SQL injection vulnerability possible in the first place, the only thing they did was stop how we got to that one. Now we just have to, as a security researcher, find how we get to the next one. And once again, the better factor to do is refactor the code and not have any way for the web interface to land and somehow figure out a way to inject SQL into the code. Whatever path allowed for that to happen has absolutely been the problem. And this is where, once again, technical, that kind of leads us there. Let's see. With Ubuntu Desktop, I use Deja Dupe to dump backup, wipe, and reinstall and restore with Deja Dupe. The system works as if I didn't do anything. Yes. One thing I do like is the fact that in Linux, pretty much all your modern systems save everything to your home. And for example, I use Pop OS, and Pop OS has a way to reinstall but leave your home intact. This is great because this will help that. This is why I said the only problem I really have is like my DaVinci Resolve, because DaVinci Resolve uses a database and a few other things that I need to make sure I do backups of it, but I need that confidence of restoring it. This is the me psyching myself up and letting people call me out that I still have some technical debt that I need to address. That is definitely something that needs to be done. I will mention this. I took a look at NixOS, not really testing on myself, but just talking to people about it and reading through some documentation. I think this is a really cool way to do very defined installs. I don't know if it's exactly the right solution for everything because it's got some rigidity to it, but I think for server deployments, it may be a pretty ideal solution where you have a very predictable environment where you want that. So NixOS allows you to have a config file that just defines the environment specifically as it should be, and then has a lot of parameters around that lets you even roll back. I love it in concept, but this is also one of those things that this is a bigger concept, like application locking. The application locking is the, or as they may call it, allow listing of applications in Windows, where you say, I want to lock down this particular Windows system to exactly and only the applications that are allowed to run, which sounds wonderful until you try to administer it and you realize there's a lot of challenges and those challenges don't scale well. Matter of fact, those challenges kind of rise up as you lock down applications, you realize things just don't work. And I know there's, at least from comments I've read, certain applications and insert name of like DaVinci Resolve, like I run, that may make that less ideal for me to operate. But I've also thought about having another computer that just is dedicated to media processing. And that kind of solves my problem because my day-to-day use for things that aren't related to content creation is probably like any of your day-to-day use where I just use different readers and things like that. So yeah. That's you know, it would be a lot easier to reload my system. In that case, I can actually log into most any system. Most of the things I have are web interface that I use to work on things. So what's on the computer matters a whole lot less. Someone says it might be off topic, but I'll actually mention this as a topic. Do you know when XOA 6 will be released? This is related to the folks over at Zen Orchestra and XCPNG and the team at Vates. So something interesting, and this is a complaint, and I get completely why you're asking this. They are extremely careful about what they create now because of the technical debt they have from what they created before. If you look at the Zen API, if you look at some of the stuff and the code they're working on, they're pulling forward and learning from all the technical debt there. That means, and this is one of those sacrifices you make, when you want to build something with less technical debt, you take all the knowledge you have and all the pitfalls that were run into from the previous technical debt, which was in XOA version 5, and go, how do we build it on a better system so that XOA 6 doesn't have it? This, of course, comes at the delay of getting these new versions out. They've been talking about the new version of the XO store for a long time, but they're building it in a way that it will have a long future because they realize in their target audience, especially is in the slower moving business market. As much as I may love using XOA in the home lab, it's actually really popular in the business market, and they're catering and making it more popular in the home lab than it was previously. It already has a pretty big foothold in the business market due to the fact that it was a replacement for Citrix. That being said, the business market moves slow. They don't like breakage. When business markets don't like change, there's a reason COBOL is still being used. If you want to talk about technical debt, well, check out our episode with Veronica Explains, where we kind of joke about it, but her background is COBOL programming. If you want to talk about technical debt, talk about a company still running COBOL in 2024. And yes, there's a lot of them, more than you would expect is what I should say. So that's definitely why they're being so much more careful. It's interesting when you look at projects, because this applies greatly to even people who came first versus who came now when it comes to building cybersecurity products. Many modern cybersecurity products have a big advantage of being built on more modern tooling, or matter of fact, even the tooling that we use in the business management of systems. So the tooling that we use, like the what we call an RMM, remote management and monitoring tool, that we use to manage the business and all the thousands of computers that we manage. And it's one of those things, like we have switched what software we use because some of these companies that are worth over $5 billion don't want to get off of the same software they wrote almost 20 years ago. They keep band-aiding it up. It drags along its legacy of problems. Matter of fact, if you've seen the recent vulnerability that was found in Screen Connect, that's a product that's been around for 10 or 12 years. The vulnerability starts at version 0, and it's not something that was found until 2024. It was quite the big deal, but it's because that technical debt they carried, that one little problem that was created at version 0 and really caused a massive cybersecurity incident that made the CISA list here in 2024. There's definitely, the business world moves slow. So kind of long story coming back to XOA, they're very careful because they know their audience. This is where I do know there's a lot of popularity with Proxmox. Proxmox has been around a while, but it's just based on Debian, and it's very move fast Linux-like. I know people have complained in the forums. I don't use Proxmox enough to have firsthand experience. I just know people have asked a lot about this. There have been breaking changes between different versions of Proxmox when they've gone through major release versions. These are just kind of knowns, but hey, you know, that's one of those things that if you want to break away from some of the technical debt, that's what's going to happen if you're not careful. So it kind of comes down to balancing those and figuring it out. Have any more? I think that's about all I have for the questions. You know, the NixOS one, I'll circle back to. I think me and Jay have talked a little bit about this. I can't remember if he's actually used it, or maybe we'll bring someone on that's among our friends that has, because I think that would make a good topic. I've seen more people talking about NixOS, and it kind of goes through waves of popularity. It's been around for a minute, but I think it's kind of fallen into, hey, let's look at, you know, clearly defining these. So that might be a topic in the future. Security of ancient systems, like having a business, not having a lock on your door and being, yeah, it's, there is always fun when you have that. Good news is my home lab friends here, we have the opportunity to be better. We can choose better products. We hopefully aren't dragging around as much legacy with us in the home lab. The technical debt problem hopefully is less of an issue for all of us. I'll answer a few more questions here. Is there any good options besides Uptime Kuma for self-hosted website monitoring? I haven't found a problem with Uptime Kuma. Actually, I like it a lot. So one of those ain't broke, don't fix it. That's why I like it. So I don't know what would be better than Uptime Kuma. But I haven't looked. Sometimes I admit myself to getting into not necessarily a rut, but I go, this has the features I want. So I don't look beyond it because it's not a high priority for me because I don't have a lot of downtime that I'm trying to track. I use Uptime Kuma to monitor not only my website and a few other things, but more specifically, all my internal infrastructure. And it does a good job. It'll send Slack notifications, which we use Slack at the business. So I have it send it there, but it'll send email notifications as well. I believe there might be, I think there's a webhook option as well. So there's different ways to get notices out there. But Uptime Kuma, definitely one of those great tools. Something I'll mention, I probably should have mentioned this in the updates, but I'll leave with this. The people over at Security Onion, Doug Burke, who runs that project, has done an amazing job of adding a lot of new features to it. I do want to readdress that. That was an early episode we did on Security Onion. So if you search my YouTube channel, you'll find it. But I do want to do a new one because they've added more integration for ingesting firewall logs, which makes it that much more interesting of a product. I think Security Onion is like one of those tools I highly recommend in the home lab, not for the security features as much as the learning you will have running your own SIM tool. It is how I understand. I've run Security Onion on and off at times, and it will teach you greatly about how security works, understanding not only how to set it up, but looking through the threats, panicking when you see all the threats, then being a little bit less panic when you understand that 90% of them are probably false positives because you've turned on too many things. You're looking at too many things. But hey, it's also really cool to dive into it. But nonetheless, I think that's I seen someone mentioned, and I haven't checked this out. Techno Tim was on our last episode. Someone says Techno Tim has a video on something called Gatus, G-A-T-U-S. So definitely sounds interesting. I've not personally watched that video, but go ahead and follow Techno Tim. Matter of fact, if you go to lawrencesystems.com, you'll find a list of other creators that I like, and I've been adding to that list over time. So if you're curious about what other creators to discover and follow, and some of them don't have a lot of followers yet, and you may not have heard of them because the YouTube algorithm doesn't always bubble up to the top of new creators. But trust me, these are people that I've engaged with. They have really good content you might be interested in. So I just put them on there as a list because these are people I like engaging with. I like them as people, but I also like them as content creators because some of them are also people I've just reached out to and talked to on Discord and things like that. But as I said earlier, feedback at thehomelab.show. We love hearing from you. We love doing these Q&A episodes. And the best way to kick off Q&A episodes is sending a bunch of feedback. You can also post in my forums. I will try, if you send me a message on Twitter, to get through them. Twitter has become quite the spam place, so I don't talk about it as much anymore. I'm still there. I'm just not there as often because of the messages and whatnot. But hey, it is what it is. Thank you all for joining. Please go solve your technical debt if that's one thing I can really impress upon everyone. Don't be part of the problem. Be part of the solution. Be part of that next generation of people who are moving into the tech world and not letting technical debt linger on and cause all these security problems. We don't need more VPNs in the news. All right, and thanks.